Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to Flow Guitar Enthusiasts with Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players as we explore tone and the gear that gets it.
Tonight on the Flow Guitar Enthusiasts, we welcome back Mitch Gallagher, Sweetwater's editorial director and host of the Sweetwater Minute and many other programs on their YouTube channel. We will speak with Mitch about this year's Winter NAMM and the products that stood out between all of us. Flow Guitar Enthusiasts is proudly sponsored by Sweetwater Musical Instruments and Pro Audio at www.sweetwater.com. And now here are your hosts, Jeff Flo to the Izzo Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. We're all back. We survived NAMM 2015. My feet are starting to feel normal. Scott, how are you recovering?
I'm doing fine. I slept for a good, 12 hours on Saturday night, so I didn't go on Sunday.
Yes.
That was nice. But, it was a busy 3 days for me. I mean, we shot, I'm estimating over 50 to 60 videos. Already released three of them up on my YouTube channel. One of them, which is my two-part interview with Paul Reed Smith, which I was very fun to do and excited to spend time with him. It was over 20 minutes of interviewing with him, so I was glad that he took the time.
Yes, no, it was fun. That was a good one.
Yeah, and so just to kind of give people a heads up of some of the stuff that will be coming, of course, there will be stuff from Paul Reed Smith, guitars, Martin Guitars, Taylor, EHX. Jeff even got to interview Billy Sheehan with the original editor of Guitar Player magazine.
Jim Crockett, amazing guy.
Yamaha, Wampler, Orange Amps, Audio Technica, Focusrite, Marshall, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some others. So go to my YouTube channel at Slinim. You'll see those popping up throughout all week and probably next week.
Yes, and also, too, some of those people and some other people, we're going to be, as soon as we're able to lock everything and confirm it, we're going to have some very interesting guests this year. We met a bunch of interesting people at NAMM, and we're hoping to get all of them on our show at some point or another. Okay, anyway, let's go ahead and go to commercial, and then we'll be back with Mitch. We got to dig in. There's a lot to talk about. We'll be right back.
Hi, Kenny Burgle here from Sweetwater. We're super happy to support Jeff and Scott and the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Show on LA Talk Radio. You can see all the specs and pics of your favorite gear and amazingly low prices online at sweetwater.com or call us at 800-222-4700. Every week, Jeff and Scott welcome heavy experts and industry mavens exploring the coolest guitars and basses, pedals, amps, strings, accessories, everything you need to rock. Sweetwater sells all that cool stuff, so listen to the Flow and then check it out online at sweetwater.com or call one of our pro guitar enthusiasts at 800-222-4700. Don't forget that Sweetwater has 24 months equal payments, no interest financing available too. Check that out at the bottom of every Sweetwater webpage where it says easy financing and hit the red apply now button. Thanks for listening. This is Kenny Burgle and Sweetwater saying rock on with the Flow.
All right, everyone, you are listening to Jeff and Scott on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, and I'm Paul Reed Smith from PRS Guitars, and that's kind of what's going on. Enjoy the show.
All right, well, welcome back, everyone, and I want to welcome officially our guest, Mitch Gallagher from Sweetwater.
Glad to be here, guys. Good to see. It was good to see you at NAMM, and glad to be here tonight.
Yeah, I was glad we ran into you. Well, let's just get started. I mean, this show's about guitars, so let's start off talking about guitars. So, since we were originally talking about Paul Reed Smith, what did you see at the Paul Reed Smith booth that you were excited about?
Well, when you walked in, I mean, you couldn't miss the new Dragons, right?
Oh yeah. Well, you should hear my in my interview. I tried to barter to get one of the Dragons from Paul Reed Smith.
Oh, nice! Did it work?
No, I mean, I was trying to appeal him because I was trying to have him pick between one of the colors, and he was like, "Oh, I haven't picked my favorite color. No, I'll take the one that's not your favorite color."
Right.
And I'll trade you, you know, a custom embroidered hat from my wife. And he didn't go for it.
That's his loss, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
Those things are just beautiful, man. The inlay on them is just stunning.
Yeah, you know, I wonder how long it takes them to make those guitars. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm sure that's why it's such a limited thing. They're doing like 40 of them, right?
Wow, really? Now, is Sweetwater going to have any of those?
I would imagine we will. I think it's 40 worldwide, so I'm not sure how many are going to be in the U.S. But yeah, we're hoping we'll have several of those available.
Wow. Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, I know these aren't exactly new, but the semi-hollow series from S2 is just I love those.
Yeah, they look great, didn't they?
Yep. And then, what was your thoughts on some of the 30th anniversary models they had?
I think those are great. I mean, they're kind of going back to what they did originally, right? With that stuff, and I mean that's so cool. They look beautiful. They sound great. All that stuff always plays great. So you really, what more is there to say about it?
Exactly. Now, they have quite a few different amps. What's your favorite amp that they currently have right now?
I'm a big fan of the Grissom, the DG Custom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a what is it? Sort of a Vox, right? Voxy kind of a thing, but it you know, David Grissom just has such a tone. And when you plug into it, you can see where it comes from, how he's getting it with that. It's kind of a, I don't know, it's a weird kind of a combination of a tweedy kind of a breakup and then that Class A chime, and the whole thing that he drives with such as his touch is so cool.
Yeah. Well, another one that I know one of Jeff's favorite is the Archon, right?
Yeah.
And they make the little guy for the, you know, for studio work. It's nice. It has the same clip. It gets that distortion.
The 25, the Archon 25, the combo?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one too. I think that it gets an amazingly chunky and punchy bottom end out of a pretty small enclosure.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, moving on to Taylor guitars. Now, they reintroduced the 600 series. Did you get to take a look at those? What were your thoughts?
I did. I think those are absolutely gorgeous as well. You know, they're doing the torrified. The citrus spruce top, the torrification is what I'm trying to spit out there.
Yeah.
Torrified, which basically means they roast the maple, right?
Right.
And that kind of gives it that, it's almost like aging it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like a guitar that's been played for years right out of the box. It's pretty an amazing process. A number of manufacturers are doing it, but it's the first acoustic I've seen where they've done that to the top.
Now, did you get to check out the Martin ones where they are claiming they're targeting an era rather than like just fully baking it and it's all done.
You're right. I did look at those, and actually I think, isn't Gibson doing some now too?
They might be. That was the one problem with the Gibson booth, is there was so much stuff there. I ironically ended up missing most of the guitars because I'm kind of a Gibson fanboy when it comes to all their other things that aren't guitar stuff, like the little headphones and all the little everything has Gibson on it. I don't know why, I just love it. But
so did you see the Les Paul headphones?
Oh, yeah.
The Les Paul monitors? Yeah.
He wants those badly.
Yeah. Those studio monitors are gorgeous.
It amazed me, though, that that Gibson now owns Tascam and Stanton. I mean, they bought up a bunch of different variety. I mean, it's a pretty broad spectrum of equipment manufacturers. That was
Cakewalk and KRK, and they've kind of got the whole audio production chain as well as the guitar chain all kind of under one roof there.
Did you see in your wandering around here, is that a new trend? Are they just being gobbled up? Are you seeing more of that kind of a consolidation, these big companies just grabbing everything, or you think there's still a lot of little companies and it's still going to be kind of, I mean, what do you think? You think that's a trend?
I don't think so. I think they're a company that is moving in that direction, and they're you know, growing that way. I think Fender has done some of that, but I don't think we're seeing too much of that in our industry yet.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to think of somebody else who's that. I mean, there's other companies that are like distributors for a number of other companies. You know, like Korg does a number of different companies. If you're at their booth, you know, they had Leg guitars, they have ARP, they have Vox, but they're distributing those. They don't own those brands.
Right.
There's a little bit of a difference there between their approach. So I don't know. Trying to think beyond Fender and Gibson.
Yeah, Fender bought a lot of stuff too. I mean, they have Latin Percussion, and I think they bought Takamine. I saw a bunch of Takamines in the corner in their place. So I assume, and I didn't see any other booth for them. And then I guess Guild was bought by Cordoba.
Uh-huh. That's
so
right.
At least there's going to still be Guilds. They look pretty good. I checked the necks out and stuff. They seem to be good. I'm just hoping that the tradition is there, because I love Guilds. I have an older one, but it,
you know. I don't doubt Guild, because they hired that. I cannot think of his last name. I can think of his first name, Ren. You probably know it, Mitch. But
I'm trying to think of his last name too. Ren Ferguson.
Yeah, and he was the master builder at I think Gibson, and before that he was just like a guru of building, I think, all kinds of acoustic instruments. So now he's at Guild, and so I have a feeling they're pretty serious. If they hired him, I think they're going to be good.
I think it's cool when the companies, if they do acquire somebody else, that they kind of maintain the culture and the vibe that the original company had, even right. though they bring it under their umbrella and kind of, you know, hopefully move things along that way, but let them still kind of operate as a separate, independent kind of a thing within their company.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now back to the 600 series on Taylor guitars. What's your thoughts on? Because I know that Andy Power's approach was to try to create a maple guitar that kind of is for people that don't like maple guitars. Do you think think that's a good approach, or do you think it kind of alienates people that actually like maple guitars? What's your thoughts on that?
I don't think it alienates. I mean, it's a different sound.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, and some people really like the maple. For certain things, I didn't even happen to like maple 12 strings. I think they have a nice, bright, chimey, open sound. And that's just me. But there with that roasted top, the torrified top and stuff, I think that warms it up a little bit.
Yeah.
It isn't quite so like you just had a entirely made of maple guitar.
Now, the one thing I thought was interesting when we were talking with the folks at Martin, they were saying that with torrification, at least what they believe, I mean, no one really knows until we're 20, 30 years down the road, but that a guitar that's been torrified will not actually age. The top won't. It won't actually sweeten, which I thought was interesting.
I think so, because it kind of is already. That's kind of the point, right? It kind of is aging it by doing that. So, it should be stable through however long.
Yeah, and they seem to feel that a guitar that was torrified also, as you mentioned, more stable, it would be that they thought it would be more. The top should not crack, those kind of things that you see happen to guitars that are, you know, 30, 40 years old. So
right, because the moisture has been controlled.
Yeah. Now with Martin guitars, now my personal favorite, if I was to buy an acoustic guitar, I think I would pick up the one of 100 of the D35 with the Brazilian.
Yeah,
that was nice, because it even had it didn't have a super big V-neck on it. It was just a regular, like, really performance, almost kind of performance neck, what it felt like to me.
Right. Right.
But then, you know, their custom shop stuff was insane.
It is beautiful. I have a D35, so I have a soft spot for them. With the Brazilian, you got to know that's going to be incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. That D41 they had on the wall was my favorite, and I mean, it just played really nice. There was one just sitting, was one of the newer ones, but it was really bright, and the inner strings were real clear. If you finger picked on it, it was just really, I was quite impressed, because it was just a standard D41. So
it wasn't one of the limited Cocobolos?
No, I don't think so. It was under, it just said D41. There was no special. It was over, it's hard to describe where it was, but it was, they had like their standard line. They had a 28, and I think farther down they had one of the reissued 35s. But it looked to me like it was just a standard one. It was nice.
Yeah.
The Cocobolo one has a bunch of inlay on it, so you would have probably recognized. It's got an ebony fingerboard and a black pickguard ebony bridge with inlay and all those.
Yeah, this one had the octagon, the regular standard. This looked like the standard 41.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to mention the Coca-Cola one. That's one that if anybody wants a super fancy Martin, it's probably one of the best ways to go, because although it is quite expensive, I believe the list was around $12,000 or $13,000. But if you were to ever order a custom of something like that similar, you would never get as close to that price.
Yeah, it's not super ornate, though. It's actually there's a lot of inlay on it, but it's not like it's totally blinged out. You know, I think it looks kind of classy with the black, you know, the ebony, and then the black pickguard with that inlaid in there. But it is still it's a sharp guitar. I think it was like $12,500. I think is the list on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I agree. It was. I think it had some sort of a bird. Maybe it was a Coca-Cola bird or something. I don't know what they were saying. Somehow it had to do with Coca-Cola wood, but there was a bird on there. And yeah, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. So, anything else from the Martin booth that kind of caught your eye?
You know, I have a soft spot for the OMs too. They had the OM 45 Deluxe, which is kind of
it was nice.
Oh, was that the one they're making 1 of 11? Is that one you're talking about?
I think, yeah, I'm not sure about that. It's also, it's like $100,000 list or something like that. So it was a pretty incredible guitar.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, it's on order. Well, but according to them, I think Sweetwater will have one of those 11, because they were telling us that Sweetwater basically essentially bought the whole booth.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think most of the guitars, if not all the guitars in the booth, were coming back to Sweetwater after the show. So yeah, at least one of those is coming back to us.
Yeah. So if anyone has that $100,000. They could send it to me so I could purchase the guitar.
Yeah, and just to mention that all those guitars, especially those ones that had that were aged, they all played great. They were really good. So Sweetwater will have them. You should check it out there if you're interested. They're not cheap, but they're really good, and they're they have that sound, because we had Snuffy Walden on, and we got to try some pre-war Martins, and they were pretty close.
Yeah.
It was really close.
Yeah.
But that OM45, that's a 1930, I think is what it is, the authentic 1930. But the OM28 is, I mean, it's still expensive, but it's like 85 or something like that. So it's, you know, a tenth of the price of that. And that's a 1931.
Yeah.
Authentic on that one.
Yeah, and I think, if I remember, they were saying all their authentics now have the vintage tone system, or their era-targeted torification process.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. I mean, that's a neat feature to have.
It's as close as you're going to get to a vintage guitar without buying a vintage guitar. And the you know, I mean, it's cool to have the vintage guitar, but as we all know, I mean, there's maintenance and upkeep and things that go into keeping a vintage guitar playing, especially one that's that old and, you know, kind of a fragile acoustic guitar. So being able to get a new vintage guitar, if you will, is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Now with Gibson, we kind of touched on them a little bit. I know one of your favorites, and I have to ask, because I think you said you were going to try to get one. Did you pick up one of those ES last year? The ES?
No, I have not gotten one yet. And I saw they had the ES Les Paul Custom this year.
Yes, yeah. I like the one with the Bigsby.
Yeah, I got to get one of those.
Yeah, the one with the Bigsby was catching my eye, but. But yeah, I'm trying to think of what else they had. Well, you know, for my own personal thing, anybody here knows I'm a huge fanboy of Gary Clark Jr. But they have a Gary Clark Jr. Epiphone Casino, which I was pretty excited to see.
Mm-hmm. They did a couple new Memphis CS335s too. They had one with a Bigsby, and then they have a figured top one.
Oh yeah,
and I think they did a Trini Lopez, right?
I think so. You know, the other guitar I saw that I didn't even know they made is an L9. I never heard of that, but
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, it was you know, some sort of arch top jazz guitar, but it looked like it was less fancy, which was weird because
There was a bunch before the electric ones came out, and they actually put the pickup in the top. There was several different types of L series guitars that were out before the L5. I think the L5 came out later in the 40s or something. But they were, that L9 was beautiful. They do custom order. You can get an L5, but all that stuff's custom now, custom order.
Of course, we talked about the Les Paul monitor speakers. I did not get to hear them. Did you get to hear them at all, Mitch?
I didn't get to hear them, and honestly, I typically don't listen to monitors at the show. The shows are so noisy, and there's so much around that I find it really hard to get any kind of a reference for what they really sound like. So I'm anxious to hear them, but no, I typically don't on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, that's something for me that, you know, I would buy just because it has Les Paul and has the flame top, and because I'm
Well, you
like
have
that,
to match though. Your guitar, and you have to get the speakers and the headphones. We just know it. I can see it in his face.
I'm still mad at myself. I couldn't come up with a way to purchase the Les Paul piano that they did like 10 years ago.
Yeah, and you like that little media player that looked like your...
Oh, yeah, the Bluetooth speaker thing. That if they sold it, I would buy that in a second because it would match my gold tone amps that I have.
He's a true Gibson nut.
I guess so.
Yeah, it's sad. I have Gibson stools. Oh, it's not even funny what I have. But but yeah, I mean, you know, I was a little overwhelmed with everything else they had in the booth. I mean, I didn't see anything like super breaking at Gibson. I didn't think, because last year, like the ES Les Paul was like my heart was jumping for that.
Right. But they do. You know, they release their line for the year outside of the show.
Yeah.
So most of their stuff does come out. I mean, the 2015 line has already been announced, so most of that's already on the market.
Yeah, and probably that's why I didn't probably get super excited.
What do you think of that line with the new, the redesigned, they widen the neck a little bit, the zero fret?
Yep.
What's your impression? Did you try them? Did you like them?
I have tried them, and I do like them. I think it's cool that Gibson is looking at their traditional instruments and still trying to push forward, but still, you know, they're still making the traditional thing, but they're still trying to put a new twist to it and still always trying to kind of push the envelope on that. So I think it's cool. The wider neck is actually, it reads different than it does when you play it. You know what I mean? It sounds like, oh, I'm going to get a Les Paul and it's going to have this huge wide neck. And it's really not like that. It's only slightly wider. And when you put your hand on it, it's really very comfortable and it gives you that little bit of extra space. So some of those things, I think it's easy to overblow how much they actually change a Les Paul into something else, because it's still a Les Paul. It's just these slight modifications that they're seeing as a way to push that forward.
Yeah, I found it was pretty easy to play.
Yeah.
A lot of it, too, is the contour of the neck in the back, but the little bit wider neck wasn't a problem for me at all. I thought it was very playable.
Yeah. I think the zero fret is really cool. I think that's a cool feature.
Yeah, I agree with you.
What about Fender? What did you see at Fender that you were excited about?
They had quite, you know, they always have the great big custom shop display with all the different instruments in there. There was some incredible stuff in there. Did you guys see the one that was inlaid with all the diamonds?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That had a Fabergé egg. Is that the right one?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like 130 diamonds were inlaid into this guitar or something like that, and 10 feet of gold thread.
Yeah.
It was pretty incredible. But in the real world, the custom shop was also doing some pretty cool stuff. My favorite was the 1963, the Time Machine Relic Tele.
I remember that.
Yeah, rosewood fingerboard on that, and it's just lightly relic, so it doesn't look like it's, you know, it's a Time Machine. Basically, it means that it still looks like kind of pretty much new, but it's been played a little bit. And I like that early and mid-60s C-shaped neck, the oval C they had on that. So that I might have to get one of those.
Now, the one I saw that I really liked looking at it, but when I felt it, I wasn't as excited, but I liked the sandblasted guitars that they were announcing. I thought they looked really cool, but I don't know how I felt about how you could feel the grain so much.
Yeah, it's different, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it'd be really cool. I wonder, I guess I don't understand how much lacquer is on there. I wonder if the wood would get destroyed more, or if I'm just being silly because I'm just used to having a smooth guitar and I can't conform to something different. But
I don't think they'll wear that much differently. Maybe, you know, if it's a really thin skin on it or whatever, but I mean, it's not that rough. It's not like it's, you know, big divots or whatever in the in the guitar. It's more like, just like you said, like the grain has kind of been raised and kind of
One of the things I thought that was pretty cool over at the Fender booth was I went over and took a look at the Squire guitars, because, you know, for the more budget-minded person, and they played pretty well. If they're the consistency and the quality is there, they're a good value for the money. I mean, like, for example, we've tried the John 5 guitar, the Tele. That's a great guitar for a reasonable amount of money. It's a rocker, and it stands its own against any other. And but I noticed their basses and their guitars, the reissue Squire Jaguar. I mean, it's not the original Fender, but for somebody on a tight budget or an up and coming or newer guitar player, it's a reasonable, it's a good, it's a decent guitar, and you're gonna be able to do something with it. I mean, I thought, did you see anything else similar to that, that you saw some lower priced guitars that were really outstanding?
No, for me, every time I pick up an affordable price guitar, I have to admit that I'm really just blown away. I mean, just the overall state of that, like you said, Squire is incredible, and any of the Epiphone stuff, all that stuff is for the price that you pay. When I think back to the Encore Les Paul copy that I started on, that was made out of plywood, that was, it was a bent piece of plywood stuck to a straight piece of plywood on the back, with it had humbucking pickup covers, and inside that was just a single little coil of wire. When I compare that to what you get today for less money, it's phenomenal the amount of instruments you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even true with acoustics, because although everybody at work always asks me, oh, I want to get a guitar for my kid and I only can spend $100. I'm like, don't spend $100. It will not be playable and you will not be able to tune it. But if you spend $200 to $250 and get yourself a nice Epiphone or a Fender or whatever, you're going to be rocking. You're going to be great.
Yeah, that's true. But a friend of mine was with me. We were walking around some of the booths, and he's like, he saw the prices on some of the custom stuff were pretty, they're high, they're expensive. And he's like, who can afford this? And I said, well, this is not necessarily what every working musician's going to play, because they can't afford $90,000 for a guitar. But look at these other guitars, and like gigging guys that are doing clubs, a guitar for $300 or $400 or less, like a Squire or something like that, that's a workhorse. I mean, that's something they can take. Like you said, the quality's there, and it can do all the sounds. I mean, it can get what you need to do to get the job done. You know what I mean?
I bought myself a Fender Standard Tele, the kind of the entry-level Fender Tele, to have in my office, and I actually took it to the show with me on the plane and stuff, and it's kind of my kick-around guitar. I'd have no problem taking that to a gig and playing it. The thing's great. It resonates. It rings. It's a cool guitar.
Yeah, and it's reasonable. You don't have to. I mean, guys that are actually working in the trenches, they're not. They don't have that kind of money. The economy is not like that. But it's interesting to know that there are good guitars at a reasonable price, and you'll get what you need to do to get the job done.
Yep.
Yeah. No, that's true.
Were there any other brands that maybe not be ones that people think of instantly that came to mind or come to your mind that you saw at the show that just kind of stood out?
Any other brands? Let's see. There's a bunch of new 6120s from Gretsch.
Ah, yes. I saw the new Setzers. Those were nice.
Yeah, they had some Setzers and also some Chet Atkins.
Yeah.
They had a 12 string and a couple of just straight ahead Chet Atkins 6120s. I thought those were cool. I think the affordable, the new Gem Junior, the Steve Vai.
Really?
Because what is that? It's like $500 or something like that for a Steve Vai signature, $650, I think it was, something like that. But it's a real gem guitar with all this stuff on it, and for a fraction of the price of the ones they've had up to this point. So I think that was pretty cool.
That's a smart move on Vai and Ibanez's part, because his signatures have usually been fairly pricey. I don't think he's ever had one that's been that price. That's a pretty wise move on his side. Mm-hmm. We ended up running into Thomas Nordig, his guitar tech, and he was walking around Steve Vai's actual guitar, what he calls the Thomas guitar, because it's the guitar that Thomas Nordig has been working on for like 15 years, trying to have everything in it from, I'm thinking the PV's, not auto-tune, but I think it's PV owns it. It has a sustainer, and it has a
Sustainiac,
and it has a wah in it built into it. It has a stop thing, but the main thing is it has the auto-tune on it, and I can't think what the heck of it is called now.
It's the same company that makes the plugin, the one they use on the vocals all the time.
Oh, the Antares?
Antares, yeah. Doesn't PV own them, or PV releases guitars?
You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, they do those guitars that have the tuned output on them, don't they?
Yeah. And so Tom is a big fan of it, and he's got this guitar. It's pretty wild. It's got the wireless built into the back of the guitar. It's got the Sustainiac in it. It's got all these different features, light up LEDs throughout it. It's a killer little guitar. People will be seeing Vai playing this, and it'll be a pretty cool guitar.
What was also really cool about it, and he was walking with the designer of this, he has a new bridge on there, and instead it's on a, you know, it's like a Strat, obviously. But instead, when you, you know, and typically when you use a whammy bar on a Strat, the bridge pulls up, right? Because you're pulling the thing over. This one just moves forward and backwards. So, and Thomas said the reason that he liked that is because when you use the whammy bar and you have the hex pickup, which Steve Vai has on his guitar, it, if it gets too far away, it causes, you know, it causes it to get intermittent. So this way you can move the, and you can pull it up. It'll, it'll move backward to raise the pitch, and you can adjust how much you want it to go. And he with no clamping and everything, he had it down. It, the strings were limp on the fretboard, and then he had the same nut that Jeff Beck uses on the, on his Strat up on top. So he had that. So basically it was like a standard Strat type setup. There's no clamping, but this thing, he could pull it up or back like almost a third, and it was pretty amazing. And it just slides back and forth, and your action's still there. It was pretty cool. We're hoping to get him on. I want to get him on to talk about that. I thought that was a cool vibrato. It was really interesting, but he was raving about that. Tom was, it was, and it played really nice. I mean, I tried the guitar. It was really nice.
And I also thought I saw, I don't know if this is the first year they were back, but Silvertone. Am I right, or am I thinking of the wrong band or brand?
No, I did see they were in another booth, another company's booth. They had kind of a corner of it. I didn't talk to them. I didn't see their stuff up close, but I did see that name there.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. I just was walking through there, and I saw quite a few people all reminisce. I used to have a guitar like that.
Yeah.
So let's move on to guitar pedals. What was, in out of the guitar pedal world, what comes to mind as one of your favorites?
There were two things that I'm, probably three, that I'm immediately going to buy as soon as they're available. And two of them are the same, or not the same, but the same idea. And that's the Boss has the compact version of their volume pedal, which I really like, the FE500. They're big volume pedal, but it's big. So you put it on a pedal board and it takes up a chunk of your board. These are like a third the size of that.
Yeah.
But it still has the same circuitry. And the other one was the Dunlop, the Crybaby Mini.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you can put both those pedals on your board and still have room left for other stuff.
Yeah, especially because those particular two take up so much room.
Right. And we did a video. We were having that demoed. And there's little jumper switches inside of it. You can change the type. So you can have, like, the vintage classic Crybaby, or you can have the newer one, I think, and there was like a funk switch. There's four different settings on it, so you could actually, you have like four different wahs,
right? Different voices.
Yeah. And it seemed to play really nice considering it's so small. You think it, like, it's going to be hard to play it, but it was really, the it worked really good. It was pretty fast.
I had a little boutique wah pedal for a while that it came from somewhere in the Far East. And I found it really hard to work with. I didn't think this was bad. I think this one, the way that it balances on the way the pedal balances on its pivot or whatever.
Yeah.
If you just get the arch of your foot right on that, it plays just like a regular wah.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was good. I mean, I think that they designed it, was engineered correctly. You know what I mean? They really thought it out. It would play well. But that was a cool, very cool.
So speaking of Dunlop, you know, the two pedals that I liked besides the wah was, I really liked that Submachine with the lower octave and the higher octave. I wasn't liking the higher octave as much, but that lower octave was pretty awesome.
That can sound pretty huge.
Yeah, and while we were there, Uli John Roth had stopped by, and probably anything that guy plays sounds great anyhow, but he was playing that particular pedal with the lower octave, and it was like, it was awesome.
Yeah.
I was just mixing the audio tonight, and I was blown away by that sound. It was great. And then the nice band of Gypsies fuzz was pretty nice, too.
Right, right. Yeah, that's a limited edition.
Is it? Oh.
Well, yeah. So I don't know how many of those they're making, but I don't think it's a – that's like a mini-sized one, right?
Yeah, they have a mini and a large, I think.
Yeah, it's not the same it's instead of the traditional fuzz face circuit, he was telling us that it's the front end of an Octavia. So it's a different type, but a little bit different distortion. So it was interesting. It sounded really good. And then when Uli played it with the wah, it spoke. You know, it came out nice.
That's awesome.
Tasty, very tasty.
Yeah, and so a couple of the other pedals I saw that I was super excited about, and I can't wait to get my hands on if I can somehow, is the two Univibe pedals that I saw coming from, one from TC Electronics, the Viscous Vibe.
Yes, definitely.
I mean, anything those guys make is incredible. So I got to imagine this Univibe is going to be, I should say Viscous Vibe. I shouldn't call it Univibe, but
yeah,
Univibe like pedal.
Exactly. It's a vibe effect, yeah.
Yeah. And then EHX has one too called Good Vibe. So I believe I recorded a demo that I have not been able to hear it because, you know, as funny as it is doing these demos and shooting all this video, half the stuff you can barely hear, and then it's not until I'm back and mixing the audio and I actually can hear the actual mic'd version, I can actually, oh, okay. But, yeah, I mean, I'm super excited, but the other thing that EHX has, which I'm sure has been a huge seller for you guys, is those B9s and C9.
Oh, man, yeah. So popular.
They knocked it out of the ballpark on those.
They sound great.
Yeah, it's sick. I don't know what they did, but all the things aligned.
Well, he was showing me the C9. He was doing like Mellotron flutes on it. That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's pretty amazing.
They had a bunch of stuff at their booth. They had the Super Pulsar, the tremolo, stereo tap tremolo.
Yeah,
was there, and also the Octavix. So they were showing quite a few things at the Electro-Harmonix booth.
Yeah, and I expected they would because they always seem to come out with a ton of stuff. And I think they had a few other real popular pedals. They turned into nano versions. I think one of the ones that they're super excited about and I think is getting a lot of buzz is a nano version of the Electric Mistress. Because I guess that particular pedal was a little bigger than what most people wanted on their pedal board. And so now they've got it smaller. So
Right.
So that's
Did you see the Tube Screamer Mini?
No, is that Ibanez?
Yeah, it's like a little bantam-sized version of a Tube Screamer, so it's got a larger knob that's the I think it was overdrive, and then it's got two smaller knobs that are tone and level, but it's a bantam-sized, you know, just a little super tiny, like the little mini pedals, version of a Tube Screamer.
Oh, that's got to be nice.
Scott's got that look in his eye.
Well, I tell you, the Tube Screamer that I still want to pick up that I haven't gotten is that... I can't remember if it was 25th or 30th anniversary of the Tube Screamer. I think it would be the 25th because I think the Tube Screamer came out in late 70s or early 80s. Anyways, but yeah, it was that. I think it's like in the original case where it's supposed to be a little bit skinnier. And yeah.
Scott, 800-222-4700, Sweetwater. He'll be calling him. He'll be calling him.
So did you guys see one of the ones that everybody was telling me to go check out was the Digitech Trio? Did you see that thing?
No,
It's like a arranger keyboard except for guitar. So you play your guitar into it, and it analyzes what you're playing, and it comes up with a drum beat and follows the chords and adds a whole backing track behind you as you're playing.
Oh, wow!
It actually works. I mean, it really does work. It listens to what you're doing and follows right along. It's crazy.
Wild.
Like for practicing, I mean, if you're practicing or you're doing a jam thing or a one man band kind of thing or whatever, I mean, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, you know, the other thing I saw you mentioned Boss was they had released a pedal router that does quite a bit of stuff, which I thought looked pretty neat, and it seems fairly affordable. You know, so
the ES8 is their switcher.
Yeah, and I believe that, you know, it sounds like they tried to think of most everything. I mean, every output or input or whatever, input and output is buffered, but you can also turn that off. You can switch the order of the pedals, so you can put a wah in front of a fuzz or behind the fuzz, or you can have it just switch between different patches. So they have quite a bit of features in there that I thought were pretty well thought out.
Yeah, like you said, it's surprisingly affordable.
Yeah.
For as much stuff as they brought in there, compared to some of the other ones that do that kind of stuff and have all the memory stuff, it's got that one had expression pedal inputs and outputs, I think, on that, and just all kinds of stuff you could do with it.
And MIDI, I believe, too.
Yep.
So, yeah, and then you know, talking pedals, we can't forget to talk about our good friends there in Indiana, the Wamplers.
Wampler, yeah.
The Plexi Drive Deluxe sounded awesome.
That was good. That was very good.
So yeah, definitely, folks, got to check out Wampler pedals. They're at Sweetwater. So
yep, absolutely.
And then you know, they had recently released a Clarksdale. Speaking of Tube Screamers, which is their version of the Tube Screamer.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one of the pedals that I happen to have that I love and is the Latitude, which is a recent pedal too of theirs. So
the tremolo, right?
Yeah, I mean that thing is, you know, you can do everything with that thing. I mean. I would say maybe the EHX one maybe has a little bit more things in it, but I have to say I'm pretty happy with the sound of the Wampler one.
Yeah, it sounds great. My favorite from them is the Ego Compressor.
Yeah, yeah. That's definitely the one.
It's always on my board.
Yeah.
You know, one of the other pedals we checked out, which I thought was pretty nice, was Rat Pedals Fat Rat, because I was pretty impressed in how I didn't hear a difference between the original and the Fat Rat. And then, of course, with the Fat Rat, the whole idea is you could fatten up the sound and do some different tones with it. So I thought that was nice of how they had that ability.
Made it a little more flexible, a little more versatile, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that other one, the Johnny Winter pedal was pretty interesting. It wasn't bad. It was more like an overdrive.
Oh, yeah, from Big Joe Stomp Boxes.
Yeah, they made, basically they were collaborating with Johnny Winter before he passed away on this pedal. And it was pretty impressive. I mean, it was close. I mean, you know, short of taking a couple of super reverbs and just cranking them all the way up, it got a nice clip to it, but it's like an overdrive. It was a little more subtle than most pedals. But anyway, I give that honorable mention.
Do you guys carry Big Joe or not?
No, we don't.
Ah, okay. Well, then never mind.
Cool. You know, there's so many cool pedals out there. It's just almost endless, the number that are out there.
It is. I mean, you know, I'd heard someone talk about that, you know, one of the reasons why they think the pedal market has just grown and just become what it has is because, you know, as we all know, our economy hasn't been the greatest for the past 6 years. So instead of going out and buy a guitar, you can go spend $100 to $200 on a pedal and totally change your sound. So it's a much, much more affordable way of doing that.
Yeah. Right.
Been buying it. What was something that stood out to you that was just like totally from left field that you thought was really cool and not something typically you would think of? I know that's kind of a vague question, but because there was a lot of weird different things out there too. A lot of people don't understand that at NAMM, sometimes you'll see some stuff that's just really in left field, but actually later on becomes like some type of instrument or something like that. But is anything, whether it was a pedal or a certain type of instrument, anything that stood out to you like, this is pretty cool?
You know, one that stood out for me that I did not expect, but it ended up being really cool, is the Eric Johnson tone capsule for the Blues Cube from Roland.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The fact that he did that, to me, that says a lot. That about the quality of that amp and you know what they're doing with modeling at Roland and everything for him to put his name on it, because we all know how picky he is about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a chance to talk to him, actually. He was at their booth, and afterward we got to talk to him for a while. And man, what they went through to create this tone capsule, it basically what it is, it looks like a tube, but it plugs into the back of the new Blues Cube amp. And when you plug it into the back of the amp, it basically turns it into his clean tone and his lead tone.
Interesting.
On the two channels. And so they went down to Austin and spent days with him analyzing and, you know, tweaking and recording and testing all this stuff to come up with this little tube that you plug in the back of the amp and gives you that tone. That's pretty crazy.
That is cool.
I can't imagine what they went through, because I know when we spoke with Eminence, what they said, that was like almost a 2 or 3 year process just to come out with his signature speaker.
I talked to him afterward. It wasn't like that. I mean, I think it was 3 or 4 trips to Austin and a few days each time, then them going back and working on it, you know, to get his approval and to get the whole thing working. But it's a process to get it, you know, when you're that dialed into your sound and you want to recreate it. But the fact that they could do it in a combo amp like that, that's just really impressive to me.
Yeah, that is. That's pretty amazing to be able to get that in a little guy.
Yep.
You know, speaking of weird things, I don't know if I didn't see them at this year's NAMM, but I remember them from last year, and I'm wondering if you saw them, Mitch. But there was a company that was demonstrating, I think they're playing Beat It, and then you could play a keyboard, and you could, you know, it was the actual recording of Michael Jackson's Beat It, and you could then just change the key, and it would completely modify and change the whole song.
I didn't see that one, no.
It was amazing. It was mind-blowing, actually. It was just kind of like you could sit there and just... You could just play any chord you want, and then all of a sudden the whole entire song would just change to that.
Was that down in Hall E?
No, it wasn't down in Hall E. It was it was against the wall, so it was a smaller booth. But it was, I think it was more where all the microphones and area was, that okay. Over there. But, yeah, it was...
that was that one.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Did you happen to get to check out? I didn't get to check them out, but I think Jeff maybe did. We've had had a few of them on our show, but did you get to check out the 65 amps pedals that they had released or were showing?
I have heard those pedals, and I think they're great.
Yeah, and they're consistent. That's what I liked about them.
Yeah, I mean, Dan Boole he has a touch with that stuff, whether it's the amps and now bringing it to the pedals, too. I mean, he always has a tone in mind when he's doing those things, and it's part of what stands out with those amps and whatever he does is that he's a great guitarist himself, and so he brings mm-hmm. that to it.
Yeah.
You know, he's really making the gear that he wants to have, and so I think that's pretty cool.
Yes, that was they're all out now, all three versions of it. With one germanium, the other one, the color face, I think, is a two germanium, and the tone bender is the three. The one germanium is like a Range Master treble booster.
Right.
But, very punchy, stuff. It was very, very nice. And he had in his booth, he had one of the new Celestion Creamback. It was an Alnico that's 90 watts.
Yep.
That sounded pretty good. And then what was your take? Do you think that 15s will come back? I noticed that Celestion was brought out another a guitar, 15-inch guitar speaker.
Yeah, it was the G15V, right?
Yeah.
You know, a long time ago, when I lived in Kansas City, I used to play in a band with a guy who had a Fender amp with a 15 in it, and he got the most killer tone.
Right.
And I always thought that was really cool, and I've never really played much through 15s, but... You know, certainly it changes the bottom end, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I have a Vibrasonic with a JBL D130, and it screams. I mean, it's not that deep. I mean, it's pretty bright. It cuts really well. You would think a 15 would be a much darker speaker. But I know that we had Frank Marino on the show, and that's what he uses. He uses old Fanes, and those are, but he uses 15s. And even Hendrix, when he played like the Hollywood Bowl with the dual showmans, they were 15 JBLs in there.
That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, he was using those. And then also, too, I don't know if you caught it, but they Celestion makes a little 6-inch speaker that's a replacement for your Champ.
Oh, nice. No, I didn't see that.
And it's like $30. So, yeah, when we were videoing, they pulled that out and showed it to us. And we're like, that's totally cool. That's a cool little guy,
So
you can get a Celestia now for your Champ.
Nice.
Well, I wonder if they make a 15-inch in 2 ohms. Because one of the big mods that a lot of people that like to do that are Stevie Ray Vaughan fans, are taking their Fender Super Reverb and putting a 15-inch in it. Because they all claim that's what he had done, which I don't think he did. But
I've never heard of a 2-ohm 15.
Well, you have to buy a new transformer currently. But
yeah, to change it to what, 4-ohms or
yeah.
something?
Yeah.
But that'll change the sound a lot, too, for the Super.
Yeah, well, that's what they claim. But I don't know. I didn't see anything like that. If for anybody that's a huge Stevie Ray Vaughan fan, for the next 6 months or so, they still have all of his tour gear, including the number one over at the Grammy Museum here in the Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
In Los Angeles. So for me, it was like going to see Mecca, but it just didn't let me cry against the wall. So,
any other amps that stood out for you? Anything different, unusual?
I was very happy to see the reissue of the Silver Jubilee.
From Marshall?
Yeah, that sounded nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a killer Marshall amplifier. The Michael Landau version of the Hot Rod DeVille,
mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty cool with the two volume controls and the boost.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that. You know what amp really stood out for me is the Hughes and Kettner Triumph Mark III. Did you guys see that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did.
Like six different preamp voices and 7 power amp configurations, so you get a total of 42 different amps inside that one head. Plus all the other features and everything. So it's kind of like, man, if you're doing a studio gig or you're doing a cover gig where you need to just get tons and tons of different tones, that has to be the most versatile amp, most versatile tube amp that I've seen.
Are they using EL34s in there or are they using 606s? Do you know?
You know, I think I'm not entirely sure that you can't put in what you want.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. I think the thing has like 6 different amps, 6 different tubes in it, doesn't it? It's 150 watt amp, so it's got a bunch of tubes in it, so I'm not sure that you can't have different pairs of amps in there. I'm not positive about that. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, no, I saw that thing. That was pretty impressive. I mean, I'd like to give that a good run for the money, see what it does. Let's really try it. But it's there's a lot there, though. But 150 watts, that's a lot of power.
That's a big amp. Yeah, well, on the other end of the spectrum, did you see the two amps on the PV booth, the Classic 20 Mini and the 6505 Mini?
Yeah, I saw that. Those are nice. Those are,
you know, I've always been a fan of the Classic series. I had a Classic 50 and I had a Classic 30. But this has a effects loop. It has a speaker emulated output. It has a USB output for direct recording, headphone output in both those, whether you want the Classic or you want the 6505. Mm-hmm. So for a studio kind of thing or a rehearsal kind of thing or just to grab it and go, those are cool. And they got matching 1x12 and 2x12 cabs for them.
Yeah, I had a Classic 30 myself. I had it with a full stack with a 15-inch and 410s.
Nice.
I sold the speakers and then I eventually sold the amp, but
right.
But I kind of wish I had that 15-inch cabinet still, but oh well.
Yeah. Yeah. You put it at 2 ohms.
I know, I right? yeah, you know, the other stuff I saw was that Orange had redone all their Crush series, which was interesting for those that are trying to get a nice practice amp.
I already did a video demo on that. That's up at YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It's those are really nice sounding amps that don't cost very much. They're lightweight. There's a 12, a 20, and a 35, I think.
Yeah.
Is what it is, and they have the 35 has an effects loop in it. It's big enough to take on stage or in a, you know, on rehearsal or whatever. The smaller ones, the thing about those amps that I really liked is that you can turn the volume down to where they're just whispering and they have the exact same tone as they do when you crank them all the way up.
Hmm.
They don't get all ratty sounding when you turn them up loud, and they don't fall apart when you turn them way down. So they're really versatile amplifiers that lightweight, affordable. I think they're really cool. I think Orange has something really cool with those.
Did you in your demo or otherwise, have you tried the direct out through the headphone jack to hear kind of what there's emulation of a 4x12 cabinet?
We don't show it in the demo, but yeah, it sounds good.
Really?
I mean, for a direct recording kind of a thing, it's tough to beat that. It's so easy.
Wow. Yeah, I'm anxious to get my hands on one. I think they're supposed to be sending one for me to do a demo video of mine. So hopefully you don't get too many hits on yours.
Yeah.
take away all the views off of my channel.
Everybody's going to watch mine, so what can I say?
Oh, that's true.
No, I'm sure they're waiting for yours.
No, I don't doubt it. But what's your thoughts on, did you see anything new in regards to plugins for pedal plugins, amp plugins, those kind of things that people are using now that are against us purists, but some of them.
There were a couple of things. Universal Audio has several new guitar pedal plugins for their Apollo and UAD platform, and their stuff always sounds great. And the other one was Motu with Digital Performer 9 now has some pedals that are modeled after like some electroharmonics pedals and things.
Mm-hmm.
So they're starting to get into some of those more guitar-centric plugins that I think is pretty cool.
What are your thoughts on, did you see anything as a trend changing in regarding to home studio recording or recording in general at this NAMM?
I don't know if I saw anything changing as far as trends on that. I mean, the trend is to give you more at lower price but with better quality. So like the new interface from Arturia, the Audio Fuse,
mm-hmm.
That thing is tiny. I mean, it's about twice as wide as your cell phone and, you know, just like an inch and a half tall, but it has more ins and outs on it. It even has a built-in USB hub, powered USB hub in it. And, you know, super quality. It has a lid that snaps over the top so you can throw it in your laptop bag. So I'm seeing more interest in giving you a really high-quality interface that kind of has the connectivity you need as a musician as opposed to what you need as a studio. And there's a little bit of a difference there. You know, a studio tends to need to be able to do anything, whereas a guitar player, it's more, you know, what you want to do to plug your stuff in so you can get it down and make music with it.
Right.
And I like that as a trend, seeing some of those interfaces moving more in that direction. And that's true also with the Universal Audio Twin, the Apollo Twin that they had there. There's some stuff from Focusrite. So there's a number of interfaces that are coming out that I think are targeted much more at the musician side of things. And I think that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. That's good. Also, too, I noticed that both, speaking of Digital Performer and also Pro Tools from Avid, the trend was they spent a lot in getting you to interface in the cloud so that you can talk to, I guess, I'm curious what you think. The trend is now basically you're doing music with people over the internet. And Avid had a really sophisticated setup where they can switch, swap files back and forth. And Motu was saying the same thing with their digital performer. Do you think that's a big trend? Did you see that with any of the software workstations, or how do you feel about that?
There's a feature that allows you to do like online collaboration in Cubase as well. I sat through the demo of Pro Tools 12 where they had a musician on each side of the stage,
right?
And they were
right.
both working on the same song and sending stuff back and forth.
Yeah,
it looks really seamless. Basically, you record your stuff and you freeze the file, which means you basically convert it into an audio file, upload it quickly, it goes to the other person, and then they can work on it and send it back.
Right, and then if they want to mess with it, they can. And you don't have, let's say you sent me something and I didn't have the plugin. I can purchase or rent the plugin, depending, you know, if I want to buy it or what, and then it'll download the plugin, and then it'll download your settings,
right?
Without touching it, and basically you have exactly how you had it it's in your session. I thought that was pretty cool.
That's pretty slick.
Yeah, pretty seamless.
The whole thing works. I think it opens up a world for, you know, people who don't live in a big city and don't have access to studio players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that whole thing is pretty cool. And just being able to collaborate with people around the world, I see some real potential for that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had Tim Pierce on a few weeks ago, and that's all he does now is he does it all through internet. You know, a lot of sessions. You can hire him. And there's several other guys now. I mean, anybody with, you know, they charge a certain fee, but basically you can get these guys. You can get good players on your demos and stuff. I mean, it's pretty cool.
It's a heck of a lot cheaper to pay their fee to do it over the internet than it is to fly them into your town and have them go to the studio with you and put them up in a hotel and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Drop them. But, it gets us away from the one guy sitting in his bedroom making the whole song. And there's a beauty to that, and that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But to me, a lot of the stronger music that comes out comes when you have multiple people working on it. You have different opinions. You have different talents coming to it. You have different approaches. And so being able to open that up, you know, whether you're hiring Tim Pierce or whether it's just your buddy, you're in L.A. and he's in New York or whatever, you know, having that, being able to combine those perspectives, to me, ends up being a stronger finished piece of music than if just one person had done it in many cases.
Yeah, no, that's true. That is true.
Now, do you think the internet collaboration is going to hinder some sort of, like, you know, vibe that you get with if you're sitting across from someone? I mean, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any substitute for being in the same room. But they're also, you know, being able to take something and really spend your time and focus on it and turn it around that way is pretty cool, too. So I think you're going to see a little different kind of a thing. But, you know, there's two different approaches to when you're recording music like that. You can do it as a band, get everybody together, and everybody plays live at the same time, or as many of us have to do. Basically, we're layering things on top, and you can get good results both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're coming to the end of the show. Is there any last minute things you think that people should keep an eye out that you saw at NAMM that will be showing up at Sweetwater?
Let's see. If you're a Kemper Profiler user, the remote was really cool.
Ah, yeah. And I think they had some sort of new version of their software too, right?
Yes, they do. Yeah, with a bunch of new presets and stuff, things that are aimed at a few different musical styles and things, but the just having all that control under your foot, and also the looper that's built into it, I think that's really cool. What else did I see? The new there's a new Royal Reverb from Supro. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Did you check out the Grace Design Felix?
No, I didn't see that.
That's like a high-end acoustic instrument preamp. You know, Grace does high-end studio stuff, microphone preamplifiers, monitor controllers, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've kind of taken that technology and brought it into an acoustic guitar preamp I'm sure it's going to be just stellar. I can't wait to hear it.
Yeah, I've tried some of the other Grace ones. They're really hot. They make great stuff.
Yep. So, man, it was just a ton of cool stuff there. It was a really good show. This is actually one of – I've been to 18 NAMMs, 18 winter NAMMs. And I would have to say this is one of the best winter NAMMs I've been to.
There was a lot of cool stuff. I agree. That was good. It was good.
Well, we want to thank you, Mitch, for taking the time, and I know that it's late for you over there. So we appreciate you coming on the show.
Check out www.mitchgallagher.com and also Sweetwater. All those videos, your videos up are at Sweetwater, or do you have a separate YouTube?
There is many of them are at Sweetwater, but you can find all of them at YouTube.
Okay.
Yeah.
YouTube.com/Sweetwater. Sweetwater Sound, I think it is.
How many Sweetwater minutes are you at now? Are you at something like almost 300 or something like that?
Yeah, we're approaching 300. Yeah, there must be 500 or 600 videos up there at this point.
It's pretty sick.
Between the different shows and demos and stuff of me and a couple thousand, 3,000 or so from Sweetwater in total.
Well, we want to thank you again for coming on the show. We want to thank Sweetwater for being our sponsor. And for everyone, again, make sure to go to my YouTube channel, besides Sweetwater's, and check out my NAMM videos, my interview with Paul Reed Smith. I asked him some very interesting questions about torrefied wood, what his opinion, and his opinion on companies selling direct to consumers. So if you want to hear his answers, go to my YouTube channel.
Thanks again, Mitch. Hang on. We'll talk to you right after the show.
Thanks,
everybody,
guys.
Have a great week. We'll see you next week.